Hey guys, welcome back to Topic Tuesdays. This is episode 10. If you've watched any of the previous episodes, then thank you so much. Any support is much appreciated.
I watched them, so.
Appreciated. And today I'm joined by the greatest Emily. So here's my thing. I keep introducing my guests by their first name because I feel like I know them personally.
I'm full named by everyone.
Do you want to introduce yourself then?
I just feel like it's funny when everyone goes, Emily Rose Maloney. I am Emily Rose Maloney.
That's three.
Yeah, Emily Rose Maloney.
But you just said four.
Four?
Four named by
full
everyone.
Full name.
Full name.
The accent.
Because I was like, wait, what's the fourth name? I don't know.
No,
a fourth
Emily
name.
Rose Maloney is just
yeah.
Three.
I was going to introduce that, but everyone I introduce because I know them, I'm like, oh, it's Emily. Yeah. Oh, it's Matisse. Yeah. Oh, it's Hattie because I know them. But I know for some people watching this podcast, they might not know you. So it is ERM.
Emily Rose Maloney, ERM.
I always ask the guests to introduce themselves. Yeah. And some people find it a bit awkward. They're
it
like, Lucy,
so
I know you're going to ask me to introduce yourself, but I don't know what to say. So you just want to say what comes to the top of your head.
So I am Emily Rose Maloney. I am a stylist originally, now brand owner. /influencer. Oh, that word makes me go a little bit. Is that enough? Is that as far as we can go?
Yeah, that is as far as we can go. Yeah. Everyone knows I love to talk for England and
we'll definitely go into it.
All the questions. So we're going to talk about a number of things on this podcast.
So much.
We've already asked the audience for things as well, but I just want to start with this one because I'm also really interested. Mm-hmm. So I want to listen. So talk us through the beginning of you with regards to your profession. So when you started way back with regards, because you've already mentioned off camera, ASOS, styling, and also Emily has her own brand, Hyphen, which is so beautiful.
I'm literally wearing a pair today. I thought I can't come on and not.
No, you can't
wear
come on
something.
And not. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I want to just talk to me about your whole journey from starting here and now being self-employed, doing Hyphen with your own brand. And don't worry, guys. I'll also ask Emily about what it really takes and means to start your own brand because I'm also really interested.
Don't ask me. I'll tell you not to do it. No, I feel like I have lived literally like 9 lives. Mm-hmm. I started working at 14. My mum and dad were self-made, did really, really well, and was just like, you are getting too much. Like, you need to go and have a job. So I started off in hairdressing. I worked in salons from 14. Got really good at hairdressing, went out on my own. Like, when I first went to college, I did art, and then I did a textile degree at uni. And whilst everyone else was out doing their like uni jobs and stuff, I had like a full little salon set up in my house, and I was like coming home from uni at the weekends and like blow drying. I mean, every single person in my area knew me for my blow dryers. I was like the queen of the blow dryer, which is just such a funny sentence now. And then, so at uni I did textiles for fashion and interiors. And like, I think that really like sums me up as it is now. Like, I love interiors still so much. But I chose to sort of specialise on the fashion side of it. And when I finished my degree, I won an award. So you go to like a new designers. So like anyone that does an art degree will know that like they have this big show and they put on, like an award sort of thing, and like so out the blue, did not expect to win anything, but I won this award.
What was the award? What's it called?
It was like a sponsor of the like their chosen designer of
okay,
the
cool.
show, and then it was like the sponsor's new designer of the year was me, and they were actually a carpet company, and they like loved like my I had used loads of texture in my designs and stuff, and they loved that, and they wanted to like replicate it in like woven materials. From that, I blagged my way. Like, the whole point of my whole life is that I will blag my way into any room, talk to anyone, and, like, worm my way into anything. Mm-hmm. So I blagged myself this internship in Australia. And, like, premise to this, while I was at uni, every summer, every, like, Christmas break, anything, I would always do loads of work experience. So when I was doing the blow drying, I worked in a salon in Chelsea, and I met this woman. I was doing her hair, and she was like, oh, my husband's like the head of Wallpaper Magazine, which is like a huge interior design magazine. Mm-hmm. I'm talking, I was like 17 then at that point. So I was like, oh, like, do you think he'd get me an internship? Like, this woman was probably thinking, who is this girl? Why is she asking me this? Anyway, he got me this internship and it was like the Devil Wears Prada, but for interior design, like.
Was it amazing?
It was horrible. I hated every second of it. But it was amazing in terms of that being on my CV got me so far. I lost an Hermes teapot that was like the whole set was meant to be like 100K or something. We used it on a set of a photo shoot and I like lost the teapot. It wasn't actually me, but it was in the storeroom, but like they blamed it on me because obviously I was the intern and it was like, who's the new Emily? And I was just honestly a nightmare. So then when I got this
Sorry, pause. 100K?
Yeah, because like...
For a teapot set?
It's like a vintage Hermes like
I don't care what it is.
No, I know.
That's the difference between me and Emily. And I'm like, 100K?
I don't care for a tea set anyway. Like,
a tea set? No. How are they putting a price on that?
No, insanity. Sorry, but, like, the things you would pull in for these shoots and stuff. Like, when you're an intern, obviously, like, you're literally working for free as well. And you're, like, pulling in a chair that's worth more than you're earning a year. You're like, lovely. Gorgeous. I don't care. I don't need to be paid anyway. So, yeah, then I, like, blagged my way into this internship in Australia, which was in a print company, which is obviously what I did as my degree, and got there, obviously, just fell in love with the place. I was meant to be there for 12 weeks and ended up staying almost 2 years, which was amazing. Wow. But the internship was not what I wanted to do. Okay. I realised that once I'd done my degree, like I think so many people do degrees now and like you think that's what you want to do until you're in a job in that, like the role you've trained to
industry,
do. I just don't think you understand it. And like, I'm so glad I did a degree that was like varied enough that I could slip into other things. But like, one thing I would say to all the girls that are watching that doing their degree, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, just get the degree. My friend Stella actually said to me once, like, it doesn't really matter. He's like, so if I'm interviewing you or someone else that didn't have it, he was like, I would probably give you the job because it shows that you can stick at something for, like, a long period of time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter if it doesn't match the role.
For sure. And I also think low-key now, and I hope people understand that when I say this, please take it with a pinch of salt. Like, I didn't go to uni.
Yeah.
I personally don't know if I see the value in the degree as much as maybe they used to be.
Yeah.
And okay, if you want to be a doctor or a dentist or a scientist or a vet, you have to go to uni. But if you want to be a creator or a creative or you want to do anything else, for me these days, I'm like, I don't see uni being it. And what I see more important is going to get the work experience
100%.
Or the apprenticeship or the internship.
The work experience for me got me where I am, not the degree. Okay. I don't think anyone has ever sat, apart from my interview at ASOS, I don't think anyone has asked me about my degree.
Okay.
Ever. Which is wild.
Great.
I got about 49 grand worth of debt for it. So thank you, whoever the Prime Minister was at the time, for upping the rates to 9,000 when I went to uni, and now they're like three.
Really?
Yeah, it was like that 1 year of uni, or the one generation that went up to like 9.5K.
Fuming.
For what? So yeah, then I went to Australia, hated what I was doing as a print designer. I realised that like I really loved prints, but like I just didn't see it being me. Like I was watching these women in this studio thinking, this is sick that you do that, but like that's just not gonna be me. Like, and I really had a clear vision of what I wanted my life to be, and it just really didn't sort of align with that. Went into retail, like really high-end retail in Sydney, and then did like more personal shopping sort of route. Again, gift of the gab, just used to sell everything to everyone. And my boss was English as well. And she was just like, I love you. Yeah, like you can stay. I used to turn up hungover every single day. She'd be like, Emily. And I'd be like, Libsh, give me half hour, I'll be fine. But like, I got away with it because I just feel like that's just what I
Who
am
you are,
like.
Yeah.
And then I sort of got deported from Australia. Not 100%.
Nah.
Not 100% deported, but I got asked to leave. So.
No, Carl, the strapline is going to be got deported from Australia.
Let's hope I get back in. But I did my farming, but I was like 11 days short on it.
Wait, what? Did you
farming? We'll touch on that another thing. But you have to do farming in Australia. So like to get, we don't anymore, but like to do your second year visa, you have to do like agricultural work, which is literally farming. So Lizzie, imagine me on a farm.
No, I can't. That's why I'm a bit shocked.
Art uni to fashion studio to the farm, like literal tomato farm I worked on.
Do you have to wear wellies and not everything?
Wellies, hairnet, the lot. Like honestly, like torture. I used to cry to my mum. I used to ring my mum and be like, do I really want to live here this much? Like, what am I doing? Like, it was like I was in prison, like the mattress. Like when I think about that being my life, it literally sends me, I'm like, what was, like, that doesn't even feel like that was a part of my life. No. But anyway, I was there for months, and I did do enough time that you have to do like 3 months worth of time there. But it was like a long story, but it was a rainy season, so I didn't do enough days work. And I just thought, I'm sick of this. It was technically my birthday. And I was like, I'm going back to Sydney. I'm going to have a party with my friends. I'm going back. Uh-huh. Like, they either approve me or they don't. Anyway, put in my application and, yeah. And then it come to, like, December, I think. This was, like, December. And they was like, oh, you've got to go. You've got 28 days to leave. And I was like, what do you mean? So I, like, quit my job. I was like, listen, Lib, sorry, love you, but I'm not coming back because uh-huh. I'm just going to be drunk for the next 28 days. Mm-hmm. Just had the best time ever and then, yeah, left.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was pregnant when I met Emily and I was fascinated by you. So we all went to an ASOS dinner and I wasn't sat by you. I was sat next to Ellen, who is like the agency we're with. Mm. And then was it you that was next to
there
Ellen?
There was someone between us. I was shouting across the table. Yeah, she was shouting. I was like, so Lucy, what's your life story?
Yeah, she was. And I just thought, like, you didn't remind me of me because we're different, but you reminded me in a way that, like, you are actually, like, genuinely interested in people. Like, you like to talk with people, and I love to talk with people. So I feel like we just waffled the whole way. Yeah. I've only known you really for 2 years.
Since then. Is that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I probably wouldn't have known the Australia story.
Yeah.
So you came back from Australia. And
yeah.
Then...
So we was at an ASOS dinner when we met, right?
Yeah.
So I then come back. When I was in Australia, I really do think I attract everything I want in life. Mm-hmm. Like, not in like a big headed way. I just sometimes feel, I always feel that, like, if I really want it will sort of come to me, and not in like a manifest sort of way. It's just always how I've been since a little girl. Like, if I've set myself out to do something, I've just more often than not done it.
Yeah.
And when I was in Australia, I had this fascination with working at ASOS. Like, they had an office in Australia and I was like, I will do any job. I was like the ASOS customer at the time. It was like the only place I shopped.
And you still are an ASOS customer.
I still am an absolute ASOS customer. I literally stand for ASOS. But when I was there, I kept applying for jobs there, but like jobs I just was not qualified to do. And I was like, they're going to hire me. They're going to hire me whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
And anyway, didn't work out. Come back from Australia. And my sister's friend worked as a PA at ASOS and she was like, oh, there's a studio assistant job going. I think Emily would be really good at it. Got this job at went for this interview at ASOS, got it within like one interview. Again, just chatting
waffled
shit.
Your way through it, yeah.
Yeah. Just like, I can do this. And also one thing I will say is, like, if you get in a room and you're in the room with the person that could potentially give, like, just finesse. Do you know what I mean? Like, I lived on the opposite side of the world. They weren't going to ring my boss and ask if I'd done all them things that they weren't.
Yeah.
So I just was like, I've done that. And I like got myself in this space and like genuinely working at ASOS for them. I think I was there almost 3.5 years, was hands down the funniest ever time of my life.
Oh.
We cried with laughter every single minute of every single day. Like, it was just hilarious.
And what exactly were you doing there?
So I started off as a shoot assistant. So I was like part of the styling team. I was in menswear. So,
oh, cool.
Which I think also made it a better vibe.
Yeah.
Because I was the only girl. Everyone was just a gay male or a male model. Mm-hmm. So I was a win-win situation for me. And that's sort of when my Instagram started to grow.
Okay.
Because I think everyone was really like, oh my God, why is she with these boys that we see on ASOS all the time? Like, who are these models?
Okay.
And like, how does she, yeah. So that's sort of how that all started to grow. And I would like post my outfits and like everyone would laugh about it to start with. And like, you'd like see all your friends from home and they'd be like, what, are you still going to take a picture? And I'd be like,
yeah, I am actually. I'm going to get the bag with it.
Yeah, I am. Like, what? And I remember someone being like, you're not embarrassed. I'm like, are you not embarrassed to still be doing the same job you've been since you was 15? Like, no. Like, I want to change my life. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I felt like that was like the start of me being like, oh, just this. Like, I felt different. I felt like I'd done all these different things. I loved ASOS so much. And yeah, I would have stayed there for as long as possible. I'm just not very good at being employed.
Yeah.
I'm just not. Like,
You don't like listening to people.
I don't have a very good work ethic if it's not for me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, even then, like, I like to do the bare minimum. Like, when I was ASOS, like, anyone on my team, I just went to one of my old teammates' wedding in Italy in summer, and they were like, you were the worst assistant on the planet, but like, you were the vibes.
Yeah,
like,
I would go in,
like, make everyone just laugh, tell them my stories of being drunk and like single and whatever.
which we can't wait to hear.
Yeah, and then they were just literally live and breathe through me, and like, yeah, they're still all my really good friends now. And yeah, there's something to be said about working with gay males every single day of your life. It gives you a different kind of confidence and love.
Oh, I love like, that.
Yeah, I would. John even says to me now, like, you just love that team so much, don't you? Like, if I talk about them, it just fills me with like love. I love them so much.
And I love that you experienced that.
Oh my God, it was the best.
Because sometimes, like, more time, I feel like when you talk to people who have worked in these like fashion houses and stuff, they don't always have a great experience.
Yeah. I think,
but I love that you have, because there are, so for anybody watching this who also has those dreams and like aspirations to work for these, like, am I right in calling them fashion houses?
I don't know if you can call ASOS a fashion house, but you can call it like,
what do I call it?
Well, it's just like,
a brand, whatever.
Yeah,
a big
an econ brand.
Yeah. Econ brand, that's more like it. Then Emily is true testament to them, to there being great times there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, didn't love the, like, the official side of it. Like, I think any business has got like, they're a business and you're an employee at the end of the day. But my team per se, yeah, great.
Loved.
Like, absolutely the best people on the planet.
So then you left.
So then I started Hyphen when I was there.
Okay.
I was like getting a lot of styling jobs on the side of being at ASOS, and they weren't 100% on board with me
doing
it at the same time.
That's interesting.
Even though it's brands that they were stocking, they just weren't too keen on the idea, which was understandable, a bit fuming at the time, but you know, like, was fine. And then I started doing Hyphen, and I was like going to my factory in the, like, so I would start work at like 9. I would go to my factory in Tottenham. I live in Southeast London, so I would get,
is it made in the UK?
It's all made in London, yeah, everything. So I would go to,
bro,
my, yeah.
That must be extortionate.
Extremely.
For you.
Yeah, for sure. But like, it's different level of quality,
yeah,
I feel.
Yeah.
But then I would go there at like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, have a meeting with them, get the train from there to ASOS. Sometimes they would be like, oh, we need a pattern collecting and we need it to us by this afternoon because we're not going to be able to cut it. So on my lunch break from ASOS, I would literally get a tube, go and get my patterns from here, take it back to the factory, go back to ASOS. And I was like so engrossed in this whole thing, but I had zero business experience. And as much as I think I'm an entrepreneur, like, and I have had so many businesses in the past as like a young person, like the hair thing. And like, we actually had an events company with my sisters, and like, I do see a pound note in anything. I do think I could turn anything into a business, but sustainability, like, while like continuing it, it wasn't my forte. And I just rushed into this business.
Into Hyphen?
Yeah. And didn't really have any idea what I was doing. Like, I didn't know like what you charge. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know like how many times per what your, yeah, wait, so what your cost is, like how many times you to get your price. Like, I didn't know that. I didn't like know where you,
it's like you were the creator and you had the creative, but you have to have the setup business wise
you have to have it. And like you have to, I think this is everything in life, but like, I really don't learn lessons unless it really fucks up. And like, I was just like putting all this money into this business. And like, it did well. Like, I mean, Little Mix were wearing it, and like, all these amazing people were wearing it, and it was doing really well. But like, there was just no like business plan, and I like couldn't.
Were you seeing a return profit wise?
Yeah, at that stage for sure, but like, not like a lot.
Were you like having to reinvest everything?
Yeah,
or were you,
and like everything was like dead stock fabric, so like it was really, it's really sustainable. So it's like, you can say if a huge brand has got loads of fabric left over from like a production run, say Topshop or ASOS or whatever, they then outsource that material to like a wholesale fab there, and then they'll resell it. So like, you can get really amazing fabrics really cheap, but you'll only maybe be able to get 100 meters of it, or like 200 meters, which is really great because that's now not going to landfill. So a lot of small brands do it like
that.
Cool.
And it's also really great because you're creating quite special like capsules rather than like mass producing.
But then
producing,
say something blows up. I had this one sunflower dress, and still to this day, it's literally one of my favourite things ever, and it just blew up, and like, everyone wanted it, and I like couldn't get any more of this fabric. And then like, you try and recreate it in a different fabric, and people are like, it's not quite the same, like, we don't really love that one as much. And that's the only problem with like doing it like that, because obviously if you're doing it in China or you're doing it with a factory abroad, they also give you the fabric. So like, in London, when you're producing, you have to get your zips, you have to get your fabric, you have to get all your trims, like everything separate, bring it to your factory, and then they just do the production side of it. So it's a lot more work on your behalf than it would be to be doing it elsewhere. So yeah, and then so I started it went well, And then I just was like, I don't know if I can do this like full time, because it just wasn't making enough money. It was just causing me so much stress. I like couldn't keep up with like demand and whatever. So I just stopped. I don't know if I officially ever said like I'm done. I just like,
yeah, you definitely haven't.
I just no, like I just like... sort of like deleted the website, and then I was like, okay, like I'm just done with that now. And then like 2 years passed, and Julie was like, are you gonna start doing that again? Because like
you're really good at it.
Yeah, like what are you doing? And she'd started Doula at the time. Jilly's brand, and
shout out to Jilly, by the
way. Out to the ginger girl. Yeah, so she was like, you're nuts, like why are you not doing this? And I wanted some things, I think I was going on holiday or something, and I wanted some things that like no one else had, so yeah. I just like sampled some bits.
I love that.
And then
I love that.
Yeah, Hyphen was reborn.
And now
yeah, like full shebang.
Full shebang.
Yeah, full shebang. Like coming up for 2 years in February, we've been like relaunched, and it's so different this time around.
Is it a bit more calm? Like not calm as in like, no, not
nothing
calm.
With me is calm.
No,
is
I think I mean like, because
it's a little bit more in order.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fractionally, like it's not a lot, not very much in order, but like I, yeah, I have like a few girls at work for me now, and like,
wow.
Yeah, I've gone back to my old factory where I first sampled with, and they've become like family, so I do like all my production with them.
I think that's so important, you know.
Relationship definitely is, yeah. Especially when you're producing here, because I think like a lot of brands start and end and all of that sort of stuff, so they've been really good to me, even though we row like brother and sister. Like the boy who runs it now is like our age, so he's taken over from his dad. And we literally row like brother and sister. It's hilarious. I'm like, this isn't professional.
No, that's like, not professional.
He's like, no, we need this done. And I'm like, don't talk to me today. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
And who do you design?
I design everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And do those ideas just come to your head? Do you get inspiration from places? Do
yeah,
you like,
for sure.
How, talk to us inside what happens in your brain. Because, and do you draw it?
Well, I did an art degree, so I can draw, but I don't find that very inspiring.
How do you do it then? I'm so interested.
I always find a fabric first, okay. Which everyone just sends them into a coma. They're like, what do you mean? Like, you can't do it.
No, I get
that. But like, I'm so tactile. So like, if I see something, my sister always laughs. Like, I used to bring home rolls of fabric and she'd be like, what are you going to make with that? That is disgusting. And she probably owns half of it now. Like,
okay.
She'd be like, only you would see that material. And like, my fabric supplier now even say like, Emily, that's been sat there for 3 years. No one's looked at it. Like, what are you making with that? I'm like, I've got a little something.
Oh, really?
I'll come back to you when I've made it.
Okay.
And like, yeah, I'm so tactile. So I always see the fabric first and then I will design something from that. Sometimes that leaves me with loads of fabric because it doesn't really work out. But more often than not, that works for me. Like our bestseller is like our black lace dress, and I'd seen like Kim Kardashian wearing this like really like sheer lace dress like a few years ago, and it had been saved in my saved folder of like outfit ideas, mm-hmm. You know, like we have on Insta. And I see this lace like sitting in the wholesaler, and I was like, oh, like it's like something clicked in my head. And we sampled it, and like literally after the first sample it was perfect, and okay. I was like, tick,
that's
like
it.
Let's do it. So yeah, that's generally how it works. Sometimes I'll think of something and then I'll go out and look for the material, but I don't feel like them things ever really sell as well.
Okay.
I always think it sells better
that's
when it's a bit more of an organic process.
Do you think you would ever like bring in a designer and take your foot off Hyphen? Or do you think it will always be your baby in the sense that you will always want to be the creative behind it?
I think I'll always want to be the creative, mm-hmm. But I would hand over the business side tomorrow. I think something worth mentioning is that it is so hard. Like, I'm not one of those people that find it really easy. Like, I don't think
it is for any
but I think a lot of people portray that it is, and that annoys me. And
the
I'm,
problem with
yeah.
social media.
And, like, even, like, one of John's teammates, he's, like, quite into music and fashion, and he was like, oh, like, they all say, like, you're missus. By the way, I'm not a missus. I've got no engagement rings. Don't be calling me your missus. Do you know what I mean? Like, call me... Emily Rose Maloney. Would Emily Rose Maloney give me some advice? He was like, oh, would your missus talk to me about like the brand and stuff? I'm thinking of starting it. John went, don't ask her, she'll tell you not to do it. Because like anyone that speaks to me, I'm like, think this through. I think everyone starts a brand now and like thinks that they can just sell something. Like, this isn't me digging anyone out. Like, someone that John knew wanted to start a hat brand. And I was like, with the utmost respect,
no.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
First of all, like, you like, I mean, you could be, I'm going to sound like a Debbie Downer here, but like, you've got no following. No one knows who you are. You don't really know anyone that's going to progress that to be. I mean, people start brands from that point all the time, but the product wasn't unique either. You've got to have something.
Got to have something.
You've either got to have a product that instantly people are going to see and they're going to love.
Yeah.
Or you've got a following, so people are going to buy it because they're sort of invested in you, or potentially you know people that are going to wear it, or that's my idea on it. Like, I have been so lucky that my friends all wear my brand, and like all of them pretty much have like got a great following, and they do it completely organically. I've not had to pay anyone to wear the brand.
You've not had to pay anyone.
And I really stand by hoping that we can do that for as long as possible. Like, we have had people outreach us with 2-3 million followers, and like, I mean, Rochelle wore it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, that changed the
did
brand.
Did she contact you?
No, her stylist did.
Oh, so basically she
her
did.
Her stylist did, yeah. And...
which is amazing.
I mean, that changed the trajectory of the brand. Like,
did it?
Like, tenfold.
Wow.
Like, I literally sent them both flowers after and was like, you don't understand what that's just done. Like, obviously... So, basically, this is a good story because her stylist basically was like, oh, can I grab some bits? And she'd asked for, like, two things. And she was like, oh, Rochelle's going to Dubai. Like, I think these two things will work. And I was like, I feel like I know what she'd wear. So I just did a box full to the brim. Like, I basically put outfits together.
Wow. So you went that step beyond.
Yeah, because I was like, what other time are we going to get this opportunity? I knew she was going to a gala event. No one had really
she
worn
wore hyphen.
Yeah, no one had really, and it was Beyonce. Like, Beyonce was opening this hotel or something. So I knew she was going to be around so much paparazzi and stuff. So the black lace dress, she chose that. And then she chose like another little split mini and blazer. I put in a shirt, I put in a co-ord, I put in like linen cargos, like whatever. Anyway, her stylist was like, oh, Rochelle loved it. We're going to send back whatever she didn't pick. So I just assumed she was a bit like, oh, cheeky, like we'll send back the stuff that you sent in, whatever. And then she was going away the next day. So we obviously didn't get the parcel back for a while. And then like the next day I woke up and she was like in Dubai in the morning and she had one of our shirts on. And then I was like, oh my God. And everyone I knew had sent it to me. And then that night she had an outfit on. Like she had
hyphen,
like blazer and dress on. And she was standing next to Kendall Jenner. And I was like, literally having heart palpitations. I was like, what do you mean? Kendall Jenner stood next to a hyphen dress. Like I was literally like convulsing. And then, so then that picture went off. Like that was everywhere on the Daily Mail, blah, 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 blah. And then the next morning, she's in a co-ord. And I'm like, no, I'm like...
She's worn the whole box.
I was crying. I was having my morning wee and I was crying my eyes out. I was like, what is happening?
It's amazing,
John was
though.
Going to train and he was like, why are you crying? so I was like, what is happening? And when I say like, the Daily Mail did us a favour because they were just linking everything on like the
amazing.
Page. So like the sales were just going through. And like, obviously we'd had consistent sales to that point. I thought we were doing well. But like those 4 days... I've never seen anything like it.
So, new change of subject. I was going to say Jonathan then. I have this thing
that
like,
I call him Jonathan.
Is he a Jonathan?
No, he's
I don't
not,
know.
But he is to me.
He's a Jonathan today.
Johnny boy.
So, talk to us how you met your partner. I'm feeling like this is... wait, why are you laughing?
That just makes me laugh because it's just a funny story.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, so he... we matched on Raya, like, I don't know, months before we met each other. And I sort of always felt like I'd met him somewhere. I was like, I know this boy, like I can't figure out how I know him. Anyway, he never messaged me, which just sums him up because he's literally the shyest boy on the planet. Never messaged me, but then followed me on Instagram like a month after we'd sort of unmatched.
Unmatched?
Yeah, because like, I can't really remember how Rare works. I've been out the game that long, but like,
yeah, babes,
I'm pretty sure you like unmatch if you don't talk. Maybe you don't, I don't know. But anyway, he hadn't spoken to me. Maybe I matched him, very rude. But don't know, he followed me on Instagram. Again, didn't say a word, didn't like a picture, was just a ghost there. And I was like, this boy is strange. Okay. Like he would watch my stories, but like wouldn't like anything.
Ever. Yeah.
And then I was obviously dying of a hangover New Year's Day, like 9 o'clock in the morning. I looked at my phone like through one eye, you know, and you're like, what the fuck? And he'd messaged me at 9 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day. And I was like, this boy's a serial killer. Like, what the hell? Who's up at 9 o'clock in the morning? Like, and why is he chosen now to DM me?
And was it like a cute Happy New Year?
No, it said, hi, how are you? And to this day, I've haunted him with that message. And I said, because it was like a new, it was 2020, so it was like a new decade or something. So I was like, did it take you a new decade to think of that message? And he said that he knew from that message that I had a bad attitude. So like, then he was like, obviously not quite as funny as me. So he didn't have quite so much comeback.
Not so quick with it.
Yeah. So he took a little bit to respond. And then like, we was talking a little bit. And I think if you know him, he's that really shy in character. So I think he was more keen to like us to meet up really quickly so that he didn't have to chat to me too much on message.
Bless him.
So
I get such sweet vibes. Oh, like, everyone I just says give
that. My mum goes, Emily, don't be horrible to him. I'm like, he's a fully fledged adult. Like, no one's bullying him.
He's fine.
He's fine. He can survive. So we went out on like the 5th. And we actually count that as our like anniversary now. Aww. Yeah, because he said he knew I was his girlfriend from that day. I didn't. I didn't. I was like, I said to him once, when did you know that I was going to be a girlfriend? He was like, I think when I literally first met you.
So where did you go on your first date?
Some rooftop in, I actually went there for a nice girl event the other day. The Trafalgar, it's like a hotel in Leicester Square? Trafalgar Square, obviously. And I turned up and I was so hot because no cab would drop me because it's really close to the station. I'm such a sweaty person.
I was going to say, wait, was it summer? No, it was
January. But yeah. You know when you're like, when you've dressed for winter, but then you've got to walk and you just tube, get a sweat on. And like, I was so hot and no one would take me there and I was a little bit flustered.
A bit nervous.
Yeah. And then I got there and it was like a terrace, right? And he was obviously trying to be so gentlemanly, but there was like a heater. And he was like, oh, you can sit there. And I was thinking, no, I'm going to combust. Like, don't put me under the heater. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, like, please, like, sit there. And I was thinking, sweating. So yeah, sat me under the heater, melted for like 4 hours. He didn't feed me a thing. I think we maybe got like one snack, but we were just having drinks and like talking. I mean, obviously I was doing the talking.
Yeah. But so was it for you immediate? Did you feel?
No. Like, I thought he was literally the loveliest human being I've ever met in my life.
You thought you were going to walk all over him.
I was like, I'm going to ruin your life.
Eat him alive.
I was like, I'm going to ruin your life. Probably did. Yeah. And I just felt like we were so different. And he was just so sweet and like no one I'd sort of ever met before, but like I always go for like the loudest person in the room, and clearly that never worked before. And I had a mutual friend with him, and I said to the boy who was the mutual friend, like, what do you think of this boy? And he was like, absolutely not for you. He was like, he's too nice for you. And I was like, why does everyone keep saying this? So yeah, then, well, I just carried on seeing him. And then He wouldn't call me. He would only text me. And I was like, there's something wrong with this boy. Like, he's just so painfully shy. Like, I had to force him to have a FaceTime after about 3 months. Cause I was like, we need to talk on the phone. Like, this is weird. Like, I'm staying at your house, but you won't call me. Uh-huh. And he was just like, oh, I'm just like, he was just that nervous.
He's just really shy.
Just really shy.
Like, very, very introvert.
Not so much anymore, definitely. But
so, John, are we expecting a ring?
I think I've been expecting it for about 4 years. Yeah, no, at some point.
Have you had the conversation?
Oh, I've had about 30,000.
And where are we at with it?
I think I
feel it coming in my bones.
No, he feels the pressure for sure. A lot of our friends have just got engaged. A lot of my friends have got kids, and like, I don't see that for me right now. So like, I want to have kids, but I just don't feel the rush.
How old are you?
30, just turned. But my mum was 32 when she had her first, and 40 when she had me. So
wow.
I think I'm from a family that is naturally older.
And I always say to everyone now, because I had Ziggy when I was 26, I got pregnant. And
how old are you?
28. Ziggy's, Ziggy's.
The youth of today.
Yeah, Ziggy's going to be 2 in July.
By the way, the most gorgeous child in the world. Aww. Even Grace that works with me, like when I said I was coming on, she was like, her baby's so beautiful.
Oh, he is amazing. Mm. I'm biased, but he is amazing. But I always say to, when I speak with girls and they meet Ziggy, for example, if we're in the street and someone says like, oh, hi, people see, like, recognize Ziggy more. And they'd be like, oh, hi, especially in Birmingham, because it's where I'm from. And then they say to me like, oh, I'm just so broody. I just really want a kid. And I genuinely say to them, I look at them in the eye and I'm like, just do you first.
So much time.
Because like, I did not realize what it takes. Mm-hmm. And for someone who is, I'm not saying that you can't do both, because you absolutely can, but someone especially who is a creative and self-employed, I really find the whole mix of trying to do it all together, it's really hard. So I love that you're like, you know what? right now I'm good. Yeah. And in due course, like, I love that.
I think what you just said about, like, being able to do it all is so important. Like, I said it to one of my best friends a little while ago, because all my friends got kids. I'm in a group of, like, 12 of us, I think.
Do you feel, like, pressure from that?
Not at all. Not at all. I see them not.
That's good.
If I have to go to one more child's party on Saturday morning hungover, I honestly, it's just, every time it just pushes me further and further back. I'm like, six more months, another year. But, like, I've seen some of my friends, and they won't even mind me saying this, like, completely lose who they are and, like, get it back now, two years down the line, and then they want to have another one. And I'm like, and please don't. Again. I've just got you back. Like, love you so much.
It's fact, though,
like,
you know?
Yeah, and it is. And, like, I just think you sometimes get in this, like, routine, and, like, some of them are like, oh, I think I might want to go, a lot of them are like PAs and stuff, and they're like, oh, I might want to go freelance, and I'm like, why don't you? But then they're like, oh, I think I might want to have it. And I'm like, I think women get stuck in this loop of, like, sort of either having to decide whether you want to fulfill what you want to do, comply to, like, what you're meant to be doing or whatever, and then also match all of that timing up with the person that you're with, and then be ready as well. Mm-hmm. And, like, what they're like, John would have a baby tomorrow, but he doesn't necessarily feel ready to get married, whereas I'm so the opposite way around. Like, yeah. I don't want to have a baby before I get married, and this is going to be very taken the wrong way. I've just seen so many of my friends have babies with men and them not propose, and I'm like, I just think, like, John is the laziest person in the world when it comes to stuff like that, and, like, I'm not ready to have a child. Once we're engaged, I really want to, like, live out each stage of our life and enjoy that stage. Like, we lived together for a long time, we really enjoyed that, we got dogs, we enjoyed that. I want to be engaged for a while, enjoy that, plan a wedding, enjoy that, then have our kids, and, like, hopefully as well with John's career, like, my partner plays football, so, like, that obviously has a cap. I don't necessarily want to move our kids around that much, and, like, I want them to be at an age where they can still see and play, one or two of them, like, however many I pop out. But I don't really want I found it hard enough moving around. Mm. I don't really want that for them as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no rush for me. And I don't think I don't know why anyone would want to have it all, like, want to do it all. I feel like when people say, like, you know, you can do it all, like, you should be able to do it all, like, it's not fun to be able to do it all.
It's not nature for us as
it's
women.
It's not fun. Like, it's, I can barely balance having our lifestyle at the moment, living between two houses, mm-hmm. which we'll obviously touch on mm-hmm. in a minute, but, like, living between two houses, having two dogs, having a business, and also keeping...
Which, by the way, are all amazing things.
Keeping my head above water as well, like, mentally, like, I've struggled with my anxiety, like, very openly. That is enough. And I also feel like when you bring a child into the world, when you're not mentally prepared, throw you off for a lot longer than, say, the 2 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, absolutely. I'm not in any headspace right now to bring a child into the world.
And it's really good that you're so honest with yourself and honest with the world about that, because I definitely think there is this idea where you can do it all. But it's an idea, because I would say when I was pregnant with Ziggy, I thought I could do it all. I'm this strong woman. I'm independent. I can do everything. I had Ziggy and, oh my God, I was humbled quicker than anyone. Yeah. And I was like, obviously I suffered in many different ways, mostly mentally. And I was like, nope, you can't do it all.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I just say to everyone, like, when they're like, oh, I'm so broody, I just want a kid now. And I'm like, I hear this whole thing about, like, I'm so broody, I just want a kid now, because they are the most beautiful blessing, but it's just not like that, you know? And the toll it takes on a woman versus the man, or however the relationship dynamic is.
Obviously, like anyone, we have our ups and downs. I actually laughed when, Hattie said that, like, her and Corey have never, like, had a bad patch. I was like, wow, can't relate. Maybe as me as a person, I'm quite, like,
intense.
Yeah, and argumentative, and, like, that sounds like such a keeper. But
he's definitely,
like,
gonna
I
marry
have
you.
Such an opinion about everything.
Yeah,
I actually said this to him before we came, because I was like, I want to say some things, and I want to make sure they're respectful, and that, like, you agree with what I'm saying, because sometimes boys just don't see it through our eyes, do they? I'd say we've been together for 4 years, and I'd say a year and a half to 2 years of that, I didn't like him very much. I absolutely loved him, and I knew he was the person for me, and knew that we were meant to be together, but we had such a massive block of everything in our life butting heads that it took a lot for us to stay together, and a lot for us to... see if it was worth it. So, like, I was butting heads with people on John's side, and I was basically had a completely contrasting opinion of what John should be doing with his life that he had been done at that point. So we were just really at a point where he was like, please stop. And I was like, no, because if I don't carry on, like, you're not going to be in a good position when we retire. And like, I knew what I was doing was right. He didn't quite see it at the time. And that made me feel like he wasn't like backing me up, sort of thing. There was a lot of financial stuff involved. And like, I think in football, you are told from a young age, don't worry about anything. Don't worry about anything. We've got this. We've got that. All you need to concentrate on is football. And on my life, if I have a little boy that plays football, I will be the polar opposite. Go to school and make sure you get all your GCSEs. Learn basic finance. Like, I don't know why they don't teach them that in football anyway. And also have something else. Like, John's so lucky that football worked out for him, but like, there's a million people that it doesn't. So when we was in the position, I was like, you're not getting any younger. What are you going to do after? And he was like, I don't need to think about after. Mm-mm. And I was like, yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't going to last forever. And he kept getting injured. And I was like, this is it? Like, sort of thing. And they're told not to think like that, which is so right, because you don't want that negative mentality. But like, also at the same time, I'm a realist. Like, what if it doesn't work out? So we butted heads a lot on that. And then I started to get my really bad anxiety. And then we moved to Birmingham, which was instantly overnight. Like, he was like, oh, I'm going to do a fitness test tomorrow. And I was like, right, okay. And he was like, I don't think I'm going to sign tomorrow. So like, be ready for like the day after or something in case I do. And then on that morning, he was like, I'm signing at 2:00. You need to get to Birmingham. And I was like, what? Mm. So then I jumped in the car with his mum, got to Birmingham. I wasn't like elated about
the move.
No, it's not like not because of the club or anything. I just felt like it was all just really quickly. And like, I hadn't got my head around it and stuff. I'd say my anxiety got so bad when we first moved here. And my dad's from Birmingham, was from Birmingham.
Oh.
Yeah, my dad's from Birmingham. My three older brothers and sisters are all brought up here, like, with full Brummie family. Not the accent for me. Yeah, so I'd spent a lot of time here. I was actually going to come to uni here. So I felt like I would be fine. And I was, to start with. Like, I've settled in and I was sort of okay. And then it just sort of, like, took an absolute turn for me. And I was horrible. I just was in the worst, darkest place of my life. And every day was like a struggle. I couldn't leave the house. Like, I would like have a full-on panic attack and make myself sort of like almost to the point of being sick. The thought of having to drive back to London, like having to like get in the car, and like the thought, it was the journey sort of thing. I've done a lot of therapy about it now. And he was like, I don't think it was the journey, but it was always the journey that triggered me.
Mm.
It was like knowing I was having to drive 3-4 hours and I was having a really bad time. Like, I mean, like, Julie came to London once and I was at the house and I was getting ready and I was meant to get the train to meet her, and I just was like on the floor hysterical, and John and his friend come home and was like, what? And Julie was like, what's going on? Like, John passed the phone, like, I couldn't breathe. And she was like, you need to speak to someone, like, this is insane. Like, and John just is so loving, but didn't know what to do with it. And I was just like hysterical every single day, just like crying at every, like, I feel like I'm getting upset now, but like, it just was so overwhelming. And like, I didn't know what it was from. I sort of knew that like, we weren't that happy, but that like, I just was stuck in this world that I'd never been in before. Like, I'm the most confident person ever, and like, I'd never felt like less or not worthy, or like, I don't know, it was like every feeling you could ever imagine, like, walked into one. And John was like, enough now, like, this is insane. And I like started to go to therapy, and yeah, it took like a year and a bit.
Did that help, therapy?
Oh my god. My therapist, Brian. Shout out to Brian. Everyone that knows me goes, oh, Brian. Like, because I talk about Brian, like, he's like, I say to him all the time, I'm like, I just want to be your friend, Brian. He actually discharged me. He said I was cured. My sister said, I think he just doesn't want to talk to you anymore.
So just what, I've never been to therapy. I wish I went when I had Ziggy. I think it would have helped me a lot.
Mm.
And I think I didn't go because I was in denial that I was fine, when actually I was so not.
Mm.
But how does a therapist work? Like, how did he make you feel better?
He made me feel so much worse to start with.
Oh, right, okay.
So my friend used to go to him and she was like, I remember her, this was like, I had had his number for 2 years. So I'd subliminally been having these little feelings for quite a while, but it just hit really bad when I got here. So she had used to go to him for her own reasons. And I remember her saying, like, I don't want to go back to him anymore. Like, this is traumatic. Like, it's breaking up all of these different things. Like, and I was like, no, Amy, it's so good for you. And she is honestly the happiest person I've ever met in my life now. Like, honestly, like, the most motivational person ever. And she was like, I think you need to speak to Brian. And I, like, had his number and I just, like, had gone to text him and I wouldn't. And then, like, ends up having my first session with him. And I remember, like, he must have thought this girl has got so much going on. Like, I just, like, I just sat, like, it was on Zoom. I have Zoom calls with him. And I just started crying the second he'd answered the phone to me. And it was, like, this middle-aged man. I don't know what it was, Lucy, but it was like everything just came, like verbal diarrhea. And I was like, and then blah, 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 blah. And he was like, whoa, okay, slow down. And then why does that make you feel like that? And then when John says this, what does it make you feel? And like for ages, it was just me talking at him. And then
I guess he had to like analyze.
Yeah. And he has to sort of know who you're talking about in your family and like your situation. And he'd be like, okay, and who are they? And like, God knows how he remembered them all because there was like 40,000 people in this situation. And then we had this one session and me and John were in Paris and I'd been seeing him for about 8 months now. And John was like, I'm going to go to gym. I was like, I've got a session with Brian anyway. And in this one session, I had the worst session of my life. So he was like, he likes to do like role play. So like if you don't get along with someone, he'd say, okay, I'm going to be that person and I'm going to say how I think they see it. And then you have to answer how they want you to answer. So he was saying to me like, oh, he was like pretending to be John and he was like saying something to me. And then I would have to be like, okay, I understand. But I was seething and I was like, but I don't understand. And he was like, okay. And I was like, but I don't agree. And he was like, but do you understand? I was like, yeah, I understand, but I don't agree with what you're saying. He was like, you don't have to agree to understand.
That's so interesting.
And I was like,
interesting.
Yeah.
That is so interesting because I can really relate to that because I've struggled a lot with Seth in Ziggy's first year. And it's that, but what is really important, you allow their feelings to be valid. Because for example, Seth could say something and I'd be in my head thinking, f*** off, mate. I disagree. It makes me angry. But if I say out loud, okay, babes, I hear you. But this and that, the conversation goes so much better.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end in an argument. And then I'll say something and he'll go, yeah, babes, I get that actually, because the other day they're that. And then I'll sit there and I'll be like, oh, yeah, just because you're listening bit to of me understanding. As well. And that's so, and it's so interesting you say that because like a professional therapist has almost said what I feel like I've had to learn this past year.
But in that moment, I didn't feel like that. I was seething with anger. And he was like, Emily, say it. And I was like, no. And he was like, say it. And I was like, I've had enough of this. And I put the phone down on him and like
did he call back?
I was sobbing hysterically. John got back from the gym and he was like, what the hell was going on with you? And I was like, I want to leave, I want to go home. I was in such a bad trauma spot that like it felt like it was never that was sort of like, and I was like, I can't go back to therapy. I went back the week after for Zoom and as I answered the phone he went, well done. And I went, what? And he went, I didn't think I'd speak to you again. And he went, and you come, I don't think you realized, but you having that session was your breakthrough session. Like, you needed to get to the point where you was, like, riled up and so angry and, like, and then it was, like, a release. And then after that, I could sort of see it from a different perspective. Don't get me wrong, he still pisses me off and, like, there's certain things. But I completely shifted how I saw. And literally about 3 months after that, Brian was like, I don't need to see you anymore. And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, no, Brian.
Don't leave
I was like, don't dump me. And he was like, no. He was like, we can drop down sessions. And I was like, no, Brian, don't think you get it. Like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We're having this session for the rest of my life. But yeah, so now I don't see him. But like, obviously when my dad died, I had some sessions with him because obviously that was a lot to work through. But yeah, he's just amazing. I'll put his details on for anyone that needs him.
But also, touching on grief, because recently you lost your dad.
Yeah.
And you were very open about it on social media, which was lovely. And I really feel like the community came together you as well.
Oh my God, so much.
And I know a lot of people have reached out to Emily and asked her to talk about it. So we'll talk about that briefly, if that's
for
okay.
For sure, yeah.
I'm going to hand this over to you because I don't feel like I want to ask you questions on your dad passing.
I'd rather you share. People have asked me anyway, so I feel like I can...
I'd rather you just create a little narrative.
Yeah. So my dad, actually, when I first come back from Australia, a lot of people will have seen it on my social media. I had a video of me like jumping out of a car and surprising him. So that was like 6 years ago. And on that day, I surprised my whole family. And when I come home, my mum was like, sit down, like, we need to talk to you. So he had cancer then. So I obviously found out on the spot, and he had made everyone not tell me because obviously I was away. So then he went into remission and was per se fine. My dad was like a big party boy. So like he drank a lot and he was always out and socializing and doing God knows what. So he was very like, oh, I'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? So then he got better, which was crazy because the type of cancer he had was like really, really strong. And then it came back, I'd say, in lockdown, because we threw him like a dinner thing for his like what we potentially thought was going to be his last birthday. So this was like 3 years ago now, and they said that it was terminal, and that terminal, and that it wouldn't be able to be cured, and that he was gonna have like 6 months. So we obviously all went into fight and flight, like
I know what you mean.
So we like had a last birthday dinner with him, and like had singers, and like it was just gorgeous, and we had like all of these lovely memories with him, and then he just didn't die. Sorry, not to be morbid about it, my dad would be laughing at this, like he just wouldn't, like, he just didn't die, like, and then it was like a year, and the doctors were like, so what? And then he was like, so what? Like, what are we doing here? And he had this, wow, like, pack on him, like, on his chest, which was, like, should be, wipe you out for, like, you shouldn't be able to get out of bed. He was playing golf every day. Like, he was down the pub with the boys. He was like, no, it's all right. He'd wear an open shirt in summer with this bloody chemo bottle. Dad, that's so embarrassing. You put the chemo bottle away. And he's like, no, it's fine. I think he half like thrived because people would talk to him about it, and he'd be like,
loving it.
Oh, I'm dying. And like, we'd be like, Dad, you can't say that. Like, but he thought it was hilarious at times. And then, yeah, it just went on and on and on. And then he got a little bit at one point. I think the treatment got really hard, and he was like, I'm done now. I'm done. And I was like, no, you're not. No, you're not. It's really rude. I was like, you know, I'm 20. I think I was 28 at the time, or just coming up to 29. And I was like, no, you don't get to make that decision. And I was like, you've got 6 children. And I get it. He was exhausted, and it was a lot. And not to get upset. Yeah, he had obviously just got to a point where he was just like, I can't do this anymore. and I was like, no, that's, you can't do that. Like, I want you to walk me down the aisle. Like, I haven't had a kid yet. Like, I'm the youngest of 6. So I was like, that's rude. You can't do that. And me and him had a relationship that like no other, like he, and him and me are this, well, there was parts of him that I wouldn't like to say are similar to me, and a terrible temper. I also have a terrible temper, but my mind's, the way my mind works and the way his mind works is exactly the same, very business orientated. He used to tell me all the time, I worry about the rest of them, but don't worry about you. You'll be fine. Like, aww, you'll always land on your feet. And so, yeah, we got to that, and I was like, can you just, the surgeon was like, there's nothing else we can do. Like, it's not going to be nice, sort of thing. And then my sister had cancer at my age. So she had cancer at like 31, I think, or 32. So she is like obsessed with finding alternative treatments and things like that for people. So she found him a professor who was willing to take on his case, because it was crazy, like he just wasn't dying, and like they really didn't understand it. So this professor took on his case, and he started this whole other lot of drugs and stuff. I'd say that's sort of when he maybe started to decline a little bit, and then he was sort of still fine, living his life. And then in August, I think it was August this year, he went into a hospice, and that was just so hard. Like, it was coming up to my 30th birthday, so I was like, I just said to him, like, I walked in, and my dad's like, he's a builder, he's like built like a tank, he's got he had the biggest hands you've ever seen in your life, like literal shovels like this, and he just looked frail, and I was just a bit like, oh, this is really hard difficult to see. And I was like, you cannot die on my 30th birthday. He was like, I won't. And then he was like sunbathing in the garden of this bloody hospice. It was like he was dying, but he wasn't dying. It was like, it's so funny to laugh about it now because he really saw the humour in it all. And he has a partner who's from Colombia. So my dad, like, even like before August, my friends would be like, where's your dad? And I'd be like, oh, he's in Colombia.
So your parents split?
My parents split when I was 11, okay. But still were, until the end, very good friends. My mum was taking to all of his appointments. She'd okay. go anywhere with him. If I'm honest, I think she was always like the love of his life.
Of course.
But he would like be like, should we get back together? Like, she'd be like, no. So yeah, they remained friends literally right till the end. But he had a partner who they would go back and forward from Colombia, who that he'd known for 20 years or whatever. So they decided that they were going to get married at the end. So she come over, and I was going to Ibiza for my birthday. And my dad was like, they sort of said to us, he's got 1 or 2 days. And I was like, I'm not going. And he was livid. He was like, you are going. Like, obviously the whole trip I was like,
yeah,
like whatever. So he FaceTimed me on my birthday. It was all fine. And then come back, he was okay for like a week. Again, they couldn't understand it. Like, the doctors were like, he can go home because he doesn't need to be in a hospice. He's not on the decline. He got married. And then
how did that make you feel?
It's so funny because I spoke to Brian about this. I thought it was really gorgeous because
did you go?
I went. Yeah, it was at the house. It was at It was at my dad's house. I said this to Brian, like, I felt really sad that I'd never seen my dad like that before. He was so in love.
Oh.
And like, my mum and dad were together for like 25 years, I want to say. I hope she's going to say, no, we weren't. We were together for this much. But he was so, maybe it was dying that made him softer. But like, he did a speech about how, like, since he met her, it was like always her, and like that, like, timing had always sort of kept them apart. And I think they met quite soon after my mum and dad separated, so it wasn't the right time for him. And I said to Brian, like, oh, I just feel so sorry for people that have to wait their whole life to be with someone that, like, obviously loved my mum. Obviously they had a gorgeous relationship and, like, had all of us and, like, whatever. But, like, I saw something different in him in that day. And, like, I found it really gorgeous. But, again, my brothers and sisters, we all have different relationships with that situation. So, yeah, so then they got married and it was lovely. But that day took everything out of him. So after that day, he sort of went unconscious. So like the next day, he just wasn't, yeah. So I'd got so drunk at the wedding and like didn't even remember saying bye to him. So then like when I woke up and everyone was like, oh, dad's like not waking up. I was like, no, this can't be it because like, I don't remember what I said to him. I don't remember if I said bye. Like I don't remember. So I really struggled with him 3 days because he just wasn't awake. We had the priest round, we're Catholic, so we had the priest round to, I've got to laugh, with the priest round to say a blessing for him because we thought he was going to pass, and he opened his eyes and rolled his eyes at the priest. I swear on my life, all of us burst out laughing. He went like that at the priest and then shut his eyes again and went like that. It was hilarious. Like, I swear to God, we went, what the f***? For want of a better word, we were like, they couldn't believe it. Like, we rang the nurses and at Greenwich and Bexley Cottage Hospice, which is who I'm doing hyphen this month for. All the there's a proceeds from each sale going to them. And they were amazing. And we rang them, was like, he's awake. And they were like, what? Like, he was on that much drugs at that point because they didn't know how much pain he was in. They didn't think he'd be awake. He then woke up for 3 days, was absolutely fine, asking for champagne, asking for custard, like acting like he wasn't on death's door. It was so weird. It was like an emotional roller coaster. We was like, what is going on? John played a game and he rang John. He was obsessed with John at the end. I don't know what it was about John at the end, but he was like, where's John? Is John playing today? Where can you get John here? So John had to keep driving down from Birmingham to see my dad, which I just found so beautiful. And John had a game and my dad was like, get him on the phone. So I rang John and he was like, if you score tonight, I want something for me. And John was like, "What do you want?" And he was like, "I don't know, something for me." And John scored, and he did this at the end. And
Oh.
my dad, my niece and nephew, they're like 10. They were quite scared of my dad at the end because he'd looked quite different, and obviously he was dipping in and out of consciousness. They were in the room with him at the time, and the football was on, and he jumped up and went, "Yeah!" And it was like, I was like, "You were dying about 5 minutes ago. I don't know what's going on." But that was gorgeous. And then the next day,
Why this?
Alan.
Okay.
Yeah, A for
I don't
Alan.
know why that's
I
me.
know, I know. And then the next day, he was like in and out of consciousness. And the girls were like, everyone had been awake for like 2 weeks at this point. We were all staying at my dad's or like taking turns. And I was like, I'm going to stay tonight because I hadn't stayed. And in the middle of the night, like I heard him sort of passing. So, Jesus, I went in. And rang my sisters and I was like, "You need to come in because I don't know what to do." So they came, and then the nurses came, and then he passed like that morning. Sorry, because you'll get me going now. I've not even cried. I said to John, I've been like a robot the last 2 weeks. I've not cried, but yeah, it was really hard. But everyone was there, all six of us. I was laying on the bed with him, and like I was holding his hand. So I don't think you could ask for like a better send off. Jesus Christ, Lucy.
Sorry.
Sorry, guys, if you're crying at this on a Tuesday, I can only apologize. Get your tissues out. But yeah, it was really sad. And it doesn't feel real. Like I feel like I've not spoken to him in a few weeks. Do you know what I mean? Like, but what I did want to say is, now that I've recovered, the messages, Lucy, that I got from people, I have never in my life had such gorgeous messages from strangers. And I kept saying to John, like, these people don't know me. Like, they don't know me. They've never met me. Like, they follow me, yeah, and they probably feel like they know my life. They've never met me. They don't know me from Adam. Like, people were sending me messages like poems. "I've lost my dad 2 years ago. I think this will help. I know what you're feeling, blah, blah, blah." Like, but Lucy, not just like messages going, "I hope you're okay." Like, I mean, paragraphs.
Essays, yeah.
And I was obviously in no fit state to like
No.
reply to them at the time. And like, I did put a thing out after saying, like, "I want you to know, like, I've read all your messages." But like, there wasn't enough of me that I could say, like, thank you enough. Because
Yeah.
like, almost, they almost meant more than people that I knew. Because I just thought, you don't even know my dad, like, and you're still feeling
Yeah.
like whatever. So yeah, that was that. And then it was quite, he said he wanted to be buried. Have I got mascara all over my face?
Look at me. No.
He said he
Just
wanted to
here, just
be
your hair.
cremated on a Friday, and it had
Why?
to be 12 o'clock so
Is
that everyone
that
would be in the pub by 2.
a...
So we had to wait for a
He
while. So there
sounds
was,
like a really great
oh, it was just
guy.
an absolute riot. Like, and so many people messaged me that after being like, "Your dad sounded like such a legend," and like, "Or your dad was a legend," or "Just crazy," or "I can see so much of him in you," and whatever. So the funeral was just gorgeous. I spoke.
How was that? I could not
I
like.
found it really quite therapeutic,
Okay.
and I felt like by the time we got to the funeral, I was sort of exhausted from crying. And like I said to the girls, like I practiced it loads at home out loud to the dogs and to John, and John kept crying. So I was like, "You need to just not be in the room." Just practicing it at the dogs. But yeah, it was fine. And like I tried to keep it really upbeat because he would have just not wanted it to be sad. But yeah, it was fine. And like I crumbled a little bit in the middle, but I picked it back up. And then we just had a massive party. He said he wanted a karaoke and a DJ. And at one point he said, "I want balloons." I said, "Dad, it's not a party. Can't have balloons everywhere." And he's like, "Do people not do that then?" I said, "No, they don't have balloons." Like, honestly, like he thought it was like his 21st birthday. But it was gorgeous, and like we were all dancing, like everyone was together, my dad's wife, my mum, all of their friends from like Australia, Ireland, like my dad's Irish, so like all of our family from Ireland and stuff. Like, it was just gorgeous, and like everyone just was like telling stories about him and stuff, and it was really nice. And I've got a different perspective on life, definitely from losing him. I feel too young, first of all, to have lost a parent.
Yeah.
And second of all, like, I have just, like, for Christmas, I'm doing letters. They don't know this, I probably shouldn't even say it, but it's fine, you can know. I'm doing letters to, like, all my best friends because I just feel like, why do we wait till someone's died to tell them what they mean to us? Like, I kept saying to my dad in the end, like, I've got like 500 voice notes because every time I sat with him, I just kept talking to him and voice noting it so that I have them. And I kept saying to him, like, do you know I love you? And he was like, oh, Emily, shut up. And I was like, no, but do you? Like, do you know that, like, I used to love it when you do this and blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, if one of my best friends were to die tomorrow or John or whatever, and I haven't ever told them that, I just would never forgive myself. And I thought, why do we wait till we're at a funeral to say, like, I thought you was an absolute legend, like, or you made me feel better here. So I've written these letters to everyone for Christmas. That's so really that nice. They know, just in case any of them die, which is a bit morbid. But I just wanted them to have it and, like, yeah. And sort of, like, and know in life rather than in passing, you're so important to me. I wouldn't know what I would do without you. My life would be so different if you weren't in it. And, yeah. I'll buy him some pyjamas or something to make it a little bit more cheery. But it's quite a nice thought process. It didn't sound so morbid in my head. What a tearjerker, I know.
No, you've really thrown me.
Oh, but I think he's haunting me as well.
Oh, God.
Because things keep flying off the wall and plant pots keep falling off the fireplace.
That's your dad.
And I said to him, yes, I was in the flat and a picture fell off the wall, but the hook was still in the wall. And I went, if you think this is funny, can you stop? And John went, he wouldn't have listened to you anyway. But I was like, no, this isn't even funny now.
It's definitely your dad.
Yeah, he's haunting me. He would think that's hilarious. But
do you believe in the afterlife?
Absolutely. 110%. And my sister had a reading last week and it was insane. But I always come through on her readings. She's like, I don't know why I go anymore because you just talk about you. Yeah,
I'm
really
sorry,
weird.
Your sister that passed.
No, my sister had cancer, but she didn't die. She's still
why
alive.
Why do you come through in her readings? I thought it's only the dead.
No,
that
they
come
always
through.
Talk about me on Lily's readings. I don't know why. She said that I'm like the head of the family.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Youngest and most dominant.
Yeah.
But yeah, that it's it was a good one, but I might have a read into it and I really believe in it.
Me too. I don't know why. Sorry, I feel really emotional after you just said that, so I feel a bit too...
It's quite overwhelming, especially when you've not heard it and you don't know the whole premise of everything that happened. It is quite overwhelming.
I just think also because I'm really close to my dad.
Yeah. You think of it...
My mom.
Yeah, like you think of it in a different light.
You just can't imagine.
I think at our age as well, which is probably worth saying for people that are in my situation, because a lot of people message me being like, how are you dealing with it? And the truth is, like, you just do. I'm sure same as motherhood. Like, you don't quite know how you're getting through it, but, like, yeah. You just are. And, like, I haven't cried. I mean, I was hysterical every single night. Like, I would lay in bed, shut my eyes, and then sob. And John would be like, do you want to talk? And I'd be like, no, I just need to cry. And then it was like, once the lights were off, I could, like, sob. And then I would be fine. And then I've literally not cried in 2 weeks. Like, I went out with the girls on Saturday and everyone was like, like, your dad. And I was like, oh, it's okay. Like, don't worry. It was weird. I was, like, weirdly numb.
Was it, like, annoying when people were constantly like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay?
No, I don't think so, because it is so nice. Because even they were like, oh, my God, I feel like the last time we spoke, he was in Colombia at a party or something. And I was like, probably. But, like, it wasn't annoying, but it was, like, yesterday, I think it's when I'm with John. So John's always been a place for me, like, when I'm anxious, if I, like, it sounds so stupid, if I, like, touch his leg or, like, hold his leg, it's, like, he's, like, a calming point mm-hmm. for me. Our energies are so different, so, like, I really balance where I am when I'm with him. And I feel like where I haven't cried, where I've been in London on my own, as soon as I got in bed with him yesterday, I just started sobbing, and he was like, what? And he was like, why are you crying? And I was like, I don't know. It's like, I feel like I've not thought about my dad for ages. And, like, I think it was because we'd just gone to get loads of his stuff. But, like, it was really weird and I felt really overwhelmed and, like, teary. And so, yeah, now it comes and goes. But there'll be certain things. Like, my sisters are quite a lot more upset than me about certain things. And, like, they're dealing with things differently. I hope I haven't got any bogeys after crying, guys. If I have, don't judge.
Sorry, we can't see from that angle. Because I think why I get upset when I listen to grief journeys and I'm listening to you is because you put yourself in the position and it's like, well, you know, I just can't imagine that happening, but it's life and it does happen and like will happen. And I think how you kind of related it to motherhood and just being like, you don't know how you do it, but you just do it. I think just puts the cherry on top of the cake perfectly, because
just tell everyone you love them is my only thing I would say. Yeah. Like, if you argue with your mum all the time, which girls tend to do, or like, just say to her at the end, I love you. Like, I will not go to sleep on an argument ever.
No.
I never leave the house. If me and John are arguing, like, I will sit there and make you talk about it till 2 o'clock in the morning if that's what it takes, but we're not going to bed. Same with my mum. Like, if even when I was little, if I was naughty, I'd post notes under her door and be like, aww, I'm sorry, can we be friends? Like, I've just always been like that. I can't go to sleep on an argument. So I just think, make sure everyone, you just tell them that you love them. Even if, again, like, if you've not spoken to them in a while, but they mean something to you. I think it's just really important. That's just what I took away from it. Just life's really short.
Thanks for sharing that.
No worries,
it's really special. I personally, well, we've run out of time anyways, but I don't really feel like jumping on dating stories and laughing now. I think we've ended that on a real note, and I think that's quite a special one. And we'll say thanks to, what was your dad's name? Alan.
Alan, yeah.
We'll say thanks to Alan, and he's...
Let's hope he doesn't chuck something off the wall.
Yeah, I was going to say, nothing's falling off the wall. But... what's your mum's name?
Ellen and Alan.
What
a joy.
They've raised an incredible lady. Oh, and thank you for coming and sharing that, because I know it's not easy.
Woo! Don't get upset. I hope this hasn't been too morbid. People are going to be like, this girl's life is like a roller coaster.
It's only the end, and it's not morbid. It's just real life. I just think
for sure.
It's difficult when, like, you think of... your dad, you know.
For sure. And I think you just don't think anyone's ever gonna die.
I know, it's like, especially when I look at my parents as like superheroes, and it's like, superheroes don't die.
And also, I'm the first one to lose a parent, so I feel like we all sit feels really young, do you know what I mean? But like, again, with the thing about having older parents, like, that sort of does come part and parcel. Like, sure, I say that to John now, like, I'm going to be a little bit older as a mum. Like, we need to think about things like that. So, like, everything in life comes with, like, a balance and a yin to your yang, doesn't it? Like, you have to make choices and sacrifices. Yeah. But hope we have a cheery ending. Should we tell a joke?
I don't have any jokes. No. I know you've probably got plenty.
I'm flat out of jokes. I've only got depression to think about.
The good news about this is that now Emily's told you, Emily lives about... well, no, I shouldn't say this. We might have to put this out, but...
no, it's all right.
Emily lives about 2 seconds from this studio, and I know the reason why I wanted to do dating stories with Emily is because when we were at this ASOS dinner, I was already infatuated with her dating life.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, no, I have to do dating stories with Emily, but we have run out of time for today. Yeah. So, but because you're next door...
we'll come back and we'll do a whole dating episode.
I'm just going to call Emily. I'm just going to be like, okay, you ready for dating?
No, because I have got a really good one that someone wrote into me, and I need to tell it, so we will have to do a little mini dating episode.
No, it won't be mini with me and you.
Yeah.
Again,
sure,
it will be about 3 hours long.
Oh, we've been here for 6 hours.
No,
we've been here since 8:45 in the morning.
So yeah, Emily, thank you so much for coming and being honest. I've loved sitting and listening to you. For anyone who's made it to the end, thank you for watching.
Well done.
Very much appreciated. I keep saying that word wrong, appreciated. We'll be back with next week with... I can't speak. You've thrown me off.
We'll be back next week with another episode of Topic Tuesday. I won't be here, but all the best.
Please like, comment, share, subscribe, all you can do. Ciao.
Bye.